Welcome to the Goalie Podcast, presented by the Stop It Goaltending U app, where the goal isn't just to stop the puck, it's to become unstoppable. Now please join our hosts, Brian Ducourt and Adam Mercer.
Hi, welcome to today's episode of the Goalie Podcast with special guests, former Harvard University goaltending coach and former Providence Friars goaltending coach Bruce Irving. And Bruce is a really interesting guy. He's a legend in New England as a goaltending coach, a former goaltender at Cornell, and now with a son who is following in his dad's footsteps, played in the USHL, played at Christian Academy, and now at UMass Amherst. My name's Brian Ducourt. I'm a former goaltending coach, scout, and goaltending director, and I'm joined with Adam Mercer, former goaltender at a couple different universities. Mercer, did you want to explain to everybody about your route or your path in college hockey? Because it's a little different than the average goalie.
Yeah, for sure. I started at Norwich University when I came out of junior. I got committed and recruited by a coach that was a legend, Mike McShane. And we had a coaching change just before the start of the year. So I came in and first year went all right, played five games, and I ended up needing hip surgery on my right hip after that year and came back, and things had kind of changed in terms of kind of where I was at on the depth chart. So I knew it was time for a change, and I ended up at Southern New Hampshire University. I knew the coach there for a long time, Sean Walsh, former Stop It guy. And played 2 years there after COVID and had a great experience. And
played a lot. That was the key. Played a lot.
Exactly. Like that's something we always talk about, especially being my mentor for the most part growing up, and just finding a place where you're going to play and going where you're wanted. And I knew that was the case at Southern New Hampshire, and that's why I chose that spot.
Awesome. Hey, you know what? It's funny. I was talking about your development and your route. Do you remember trying out for Mass Player Development?
I do. I remember 3 or 4 years of Mass Player Development festivals and, you know, getting to that spot where you think that you might go to the national camp, which is everybody's goal there. And unfortunately, it just didn't work out for me. But, you know, it built resiliency in me, right? Okay. So, but yeah.
So this weekend on Sunday is the first of a series of tryouts that the kids are going to. And it's three age groups. It's the 07s, 08s, 09s, I believe.
It's crazy. That's crazy. We're saying 06, 07, 08.
Yeah. But it was, I was talking to the Bridge Kids, the academy here at Stop It Goaltending. I was talking to the Bridge Kids. We have a number of them that are going to be trying out. And I was trying to explain, they're going to the goalie tryout, which is basically they put 24 goalies on the ice for an hour.
Yep.
And you have two coaches that are sitting up in the stands. And those two coaches are going to rank those 24 goalies. And the top 12 are going to be picked to move on. So it's generally the way it works. And I was trying to explain to them how you actually do the tryout. Like, there's so many people, I think, don't understand how to try out for a team. It seems simple, right? You go to a tryout and, you know, you try to stop pucks and that's about it. But I actually think there's so much more to it. And I was trying to explain, like, first off, the tryout's on Sunday. And we all know the most important sleep before an event is two nights before the event. It's not the night before the event, even though that's important. And doesn't mean you don't go to sleep early, or you don't, you know, you stay up late the night before a game. But, you know, it's really the two nights before that is going to have the biggest impact. So your prep for this tryout actually starts 2 days before it starts. So it's the night two nights before. And then the day before, it's about making sure that you're not, you know, using up energy for no reason. And you're hydrating, so you're getting prepared to go to a tryout the next day, which for the goalies is very important. Yep. And I think that leading up to it is really important to understand that, you know, it doesn't start when you get to the rink. it starts beforehand. It's important the day before how you treat your body, how you take care of yourself, and how you prepare. And then going to the tryout. So I use this example, 10 o'clock tryout. You have to get there at least by 9 o'clock.
I was a guy who would get there before 9 o'clock.
Without a doubt. And the reason is, well, first off, you make sure the day before you're ready to go, your skates are sharp and your equipment's packed, like you're set. There's nothing going to pop up in the morning. But you get there at least an hour beforehand because there's four different sheets going at the same time. They're going to have two people doing check-in.
Right.
You could go to check-in at 9 o'clock for a 10 o'clock session, and there could be three people in line, or there could be 33 people in line. You don't know. So now you're sitting there in line, waiting, and your time's running out. Now you're not going to get a chance to do a dynamic warm-up before you get in the locker room. 100%. So it becomes so important to get there on time. You don't want to get there and, oh my God, I forgot my knee pads. Now I got to go to the pro shop. I'm not going to name the goalie, but I'm thinking about him right now. I did name him this morning in the talk, but so you have that getting there in time and making sure that when you get to the front, oh, we don't have a jersey for you. Oh, we're going to have to do this. Or, oh, we don't have your registration. Can you check your email? All that stuff can happen. Yep. And you want to give yourself time just in case, like 90% chance it's not, but just in case it does, because it does happen with a whole bunch of kids because that's just the way it is. And then, so you get through that part. Now it's time to get in the locker room, get changed, get out there, do your warm up. And then I think kids can lose. They can lose themselves in the locker room because they walk in, there's 24 goalies.
Yep.
And they're buddies from summer camp and there's buddies from that team. And all of a sudden they're having fun and chirping away in the locker room and they forget they're there to make the program, to make the cut. And I've seen kids, they lose out. They go the wrong way in that locker room.
Yeah, I mean they're kids, right? Like they see their buddies and they lose that focus. So I think the big part is like always keep that in the back of your head, right? Like we're not saying you can't have fun, right?
Absolutely not. You can absolutely be social, but you're there for the tryout.
Yep.
You know, it's not Chuck E. Cheese. Let's go. Like we're here to make a program. Like everybody's trying to make the mass player development and move along and hopefully end up at the national camp. But so then, you know, once you get past the locker room part, now you're getting on the ice. So you get on the ice. Once you get on the ice, it's all business. So you're getting your hip activation done. You're getting your stretch. You get a little skate in. And then it always starts off the same way. It starts off with skating drills.
Yep.
Now, if you're all gung ho and you're not thinking, you could go a million miles an hour in these skating drills, go from A to Z without stopping, A to B, B to C, C to D, and you are bagged by the time they start shooting the puck.
And especially like even in these skating drills, right? You can go fast, but don't lose your details too, right? I've seen people go a billion miles an hour and they're not getting square to their points. So then they look bad to the two evaluators upstairs, right? Yes. Like you have to be able to, yes, you want to push yourself. By the same token, you don't want to get to this point where you're losing everything that you have in your technique.
Point A to point B in control with some jam, with some pop, but with body control, setting, stopping, you have to present yourself. Like you know what you're doing and you're getting there quickly, but in control. And that's why it's like point A to point B. Point B to point C, not running through the entire alphabet and never setting and stopping. You're just rushing.
Exactly.
So you get through the skating part, you get a good warm up in. You're not going to make or break the team on how you do the triangle drill. Okay. Is it important? Yes, it's part of it, but you got to make sure that you're not the guy that's expending all their energy before it's time to stop a puck. So Now, most of the drills in the mass player development are going to be high probability, high event chances for the shooters, because if they don't, they're not going to be able to differentiate the goalies.
Yeah.
So what you have is you have a series of battle drills where goalies are competing against other goalies, multiple nets, backdoor options, so on and so forth. The way you lose and the way you don't look good in that is if you chase the puck.
Definitely. Definitely.
Your spatial awareness, your understanding of where you are in the crease and not getting sucked out because there's no one playing defense. They're just buzzing that puck all around. If you chase the puck, you're dead. Okay. So it's a very mature way to look at it. You have to compete your ass off, but at the same time, you can't get pulled outside the parallels. You can't get pulled outside your crease chasing one guy because there's free guys all over the place. So when you're competing, it's staying in control in the middle of the net. Give yourself a chance to make a save. Don't get sucked outside the net. Battle and compete hard without getting drawn away. Does that make sense to you, Merce?
100%. And just think about this too. They got shooters out there that are also trying out, but they're not in their, they're in the goalie trial. So they're not doing things that are going to make them good. They're going to make these backdoor plays, these egregious out backdoor plays that are just out of this world that you're probably not supposed to stop. But if you take that approach of not playing outside your post, not chasing the puck, you have a higher probability of making those saves, right? And that's going to make you look good to those guys upstairs.
So now you talk about those guys upstairs, okay? So think about this. There's six different stations. There's 24 goalies. There's six different stations. There's two guys evaluating. You have no idea what they're looking at.
No, you're going to get a snapshot. You're giving them a snapshot of your game.
Without a doubt, they're getting a snapshot. So this is what I tell the kids. I said, your parents, they're watching every shot you get. They're watching a motion picture. The evaluators, they're watching Instagram clips.
Yep.
That's what they're watching, because they're buzzing from that net to that. You never know. And here's the thing. You can get lit up 17 times. You have no idea if the evaluators saw one of those goals. So there's absolutely no reason to get down and show bad body language and get defeated, because you give up a softie, there's 24 other guys on the ice. You don't know if they're looking.
And that bad body language, talk about that piece for a second. It's another layer to it.
That kills you.
100%.
That sends the signal to those coaches. Oh, yeah, that goalie's not doing well. That goalie's getting lit up. Like, you're basically waving the white flag saying, cut me, if you're showing body language. Because chances are they have no clue how you're doing.
Yeah.
Because they're just taking those snapshots.
Ideally, like, you want to have that chest puffed out. Like,
oh, yeah.
Up. And, like, even just, like, your interactions with the other goalies is super important too, right? Like, giving them a fist bump on the way out of the net, I think that's huge as well. Like, the evaluators are going to see that. And, I mean, they're looking for the best goalie, but they don't want the best goalie and someone who's going to be a problem, right? They want a good all-around kid as well, right? So I think those other pieces, as you're doing this evaluation, that comes into play as well.
Because that goes into your controllables, right? Your energy.
Yes.
Your attitude, your focus. And for me, what you want to show in these tryouts is the I word, intensity.
Yes.
An evaluator can feel and sense the passion and the intensity that you're bringing to it. And there's so much more of a draw and an allure to that goalie, because you want that goalie to stop the puck, because you're cheering for the goalie that's given it and playing with that intensity. So for me, I think that's so important. And then you talk about in and out of the net. You don't want to be stuck in a net for a long period of time.
No.
You want to get in fresh and get out fresh. so that your next, it's not about that rep, it's about the next rep and then the rep after that. So each time you get in, you want to come in fresh, because you never know which rep is going to get viewed and evaluated.
Exactly, right? The worst possible case scenario is that you're absolutely gasping for air, and then you got to go in, and then the evaluators got their notebook.
Yeah. Like, now we're looking at Mercer, and Mercer's gassed.
He's out of shape.
Mercer's not going to look good.
Yeah. Yep. No, 100%. That's like you said, you got to almost, I don't want to say conserve your energy, but be smart about the reps you're taking and make sure that you're coming out and you're not completely gassed.
Yes. Yeah. So it's exactly like a player. 40 seconds on, get off the ice. It's if they don't get off in 40 seconds and they get hemmed in their zone and they're on the ice for a minute and a half, a minute and 45 seconds, it takes them 2 to 3 shifts to recover.
Yep.
To get back to where they were. So that's the same mentality that a goalie has to have when they're in these as well.
Definitely. Definitely. Short shifts are going to win you games at that point, right?
Without a doubt. Short and hard, right? Short shifts, bring that intensity. And I've got a world-class move to end this. Well, you know they're going to end in breakaways.
Yep, right? Definitely.
So now they're going to throw all the goalies along the boards, and they're going to have 3 nets out, and they're going to have these multiple breakaways going on. And I'm like, okay, so what are you going to do? You're going to watch the other goalies? No. You're going to watch the shooters.
They only have so many moves.
Without a doubt. Figure it out. Who's shooting? Who's deking? Who's sick? Right? Who's got sick mood? Like, figure out who's good. And then now you know, when they start coming, now you know. And you're prepared for them. So instead of just standing there, just ho-humming it, like, start studying the shooters and see what kind of edge that you can get on those guys.
Definitely do that pre-scout on those shooters almost, right? Like,
that's what you're doing.
Exactly.
You're getting ready for it. And then I'd say the last part, and this is world-class, last part, tryout ends. Go over to the coaches and give them some glove love. Thanks, coach.
Just a big thank you.
Oh, yeah.
Again, evaluators see that kind of stuff.
No, like if I'm up there evaluating, I see a goalie and he looked good to me and he's doing everything I want. He goes at the end of the session, he goes, gives a director or gives a coach a high five after. I'm like, oh, yeah, there we go.
And like, even so, you got 2 guys who are equal. Who are you going to choose? The guy who
gave you? Oh, without a doubt, differentiating factors.
100%. You're giving that guy the shot that did give the glove love as opposed to the guy who just skated off the ice.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I love that stuff. And I know that for youth hockey goalies, and you know, whether it's youth or prep or junior, whatever, like giving the ref some knucks at the end of a game, it goes a long way. If you show those guys some respect and some gratitude, I think you want some quick whistles, treat the refs with some respect and some courtesy. You'll get those whistles.
I definitely use that to my advantage a few times while I was playing. Make sure you make good relationships with the referees. They'll treat you right.
And you know, Bruce is going to talk about building relationships in this podcast or this interview that's coming up on our podcast here. Great interview. Oh my God. I'm sitting there going, I felt so bad. Is it Bruce has been with us about 45 minutes here. We've got to shut this down. There was no stop in that interview.
You guys rolled the entire time, but it was all value. It wasn't like you guys were just, you know, useless conversation, but really listen to everything that Bruce says here. It's super important. Whether you're a parent, a coach, a goalie, everyone can get something out of this one.
And it's so nice that he's all 3 of them. He's all 3. He's a goalie parent, a former goalie. He's a goalie coach, very well known, very well respected. And he's not well respected just as a goalie coach. He's just well respected as a quality human being and a great role model. He's always been that, and that's how people know him. And I think that's a great reputation to have. Not only are you very good at what you do, but you're just a tremendous person.
100%. I first met Bruce this past summer, and the amount of time he gave me just to pick his brain even was just, it's invaluable. He's a great human. Why don't we send it over to him?
Awesome. Let's get this thing going. We're really excited this week to welcome Bruce Irving to the Goalie Podcast. Now, this is really special. I have no idea where this is going to go, Bruce, because, Bruce, you weren't only a college goaltender at Cornell, but NCAA Division I college goaltending coach at Harvard,
yes.
Providence College,
yes.
And a goalie dad at the same time.
All at the same time.
So a former goalie, a goalie coach, and a goalie dad. So I have no idea where this is going to go. But I want to start off a little bit about the college hockey experience from a goalie coach's standpoint. So you've been in the ECAC. You've been in Hockey East. Tell us a little bit about what a goalie's life is in terms of being successful at the Division I level. So when you had, you know, you've had so many goalies over the years, what do you think it is that makes a goalie someone that's able to transition to Division I college hockey and be successful?
Right. I mean, I don't want to get controversial, but I have my view, right? These kids, to a certain degree, like they're a bit on an island. I mean, they have to be so resilient, right? So I feel like the goalie coach's role is to help them navigate that, right? So, I mean, they put the work in. I believe the goalie coach plays such a vital role, right, as their advocate, because sometimes there's a lot expected of them, a lot, and having the thick skin, being able to get through rough times, right, is I think a crucial, element to their game, to their preparation, to their approach, right, to the game. I've had a lot of different goalies. Some were on past play beyond college, some were not. But I think they all were after the same thing. Every one of them were after the same thing, right? And that is to be ready to play when they're called upon, right? And to earn the right to play again after that. And the guys that can handle the pressure the best, right, have the best tools, the best training, the best approach, but the guys that can really handle the pressure the best are, as far as I can tell, have been the ones that have been able to be really successful at Division I level.
So, Marsh, you notice that Bruce's answer had nothing to do with rebound control and skating. And do you know, like, that's the first thing that's striking me.
Sure.
Right away, you go right for the mental part.
Yes.
And the word that you use struck me, expectations. So my follow-up to that is, are the expectations fair? Like, is it fair, the expectations that are put on a goaltender at the higher levels?
I don't think it's fair. And I think I think oftentimes it's because whoever's making the ultimate decision, quite often is not a goalie, never been a goalie, never lived the goalie life, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I say it all the time. And when I started by saying about being controversial, that's not my intention. But I do feel for these kids a lot. I get very emotionally invested in their route, right, in their path. So when I see the things that they need to endure in order to be better the next day or whatever, it's a lot. And a big part of that is the fact that, again, the guys that are making the decisions quite often don't really know what it's like to walk in their shoes, right? And so that's why the goalies are so lucky to have an advocate with them on that team, on their team, you know, the goalie coach. And oftentimes I feel like sometimes the goalie coach is a bit more like a goalie than he is like a coach in terms of,
what team they're on.
Exactly. So, I don't think it's necessarily fair. I think in most cases, a lot of guys that I've come across, they want everything stopped. They have a problem with virtually every goal against.
They have a problem when the goal is scored on their net. If they score the exact same goal on the opposing net, then that's a great, gritty goal.
Yes. It's funny how that works.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So again, you know, I don't want to be the guy that's pointing fingers at anybody out there, coaches. I just want to make my point where I feel like, you know, sometimes the expectations are not fair. But when I started by saying about thick skin and resilience, that's what they have to deal with. That's the part that they have to get over.
So I say this, and it maybe you'll get it when I say it.
Sure.
I'm a goalie coach at Boston University, but I consider myself working for the goalies, not for the university.
Oh, me too.
That's how I look at it.
Oh yes.
Like I'm there for the kids, and it's like what is best for them comes first for me. But then you get into this issue, and Merce, you're just getting into this goalie thing, and Bruce and I have been through the wars here. Like, you're part of the staff, but you're on the outside of that, right? Like, you're not. It's a different being part of that. Bruce, you know what I mean by that?
I mean, I'm being careful with my words because I don't want anybody to think I'm too bitter about just my experience in general. But yes, that's exactly correct. That is exactly correct. You know what I mean? So that's why you play such a vital role with the goalies. It's exactly correct. Because you have to walk that line. Like you come in after the first period and you get an earful over a particular goal against, right? And then now right away, all you're thinking about is defending your guy, right? You're just thinking about defending your guy. So you're on the goalies team, right? You're not so much,
yes,
you know, on the staff, exactly what you're saying. So, and I've been through that a million times. So you just, you know, you feel it in your heart that you need to defend your guy, right? And explain everything that happened just then. And I'm still doing it for goalies that I don't even necessarily coach one-on-one anymore right now. I'm still doing it, you know.
Do you almost feel like you have to toe a line though with the
staff
as well?
I was absolutely just gonna mention that you have to toe a line. So you have to be careful with your comments, right? You have to make the staff feel comfortable that you're on board with them, right? And you're just not gonna defend your goalie, you know, when it's really doesn't warrant, right? So you know, yeah, you have to walk the line for sure, because ultimately your responsibility is to the coaching staff. Right. And to do what's right for the team. And so you do have to walk your line. But I've been in situations where I've really, really felt like, I, you know, there's been some back and forth, and I stick to my guns and defend the goalies.
Definitely.
Pretty much all the time.
And picking the spots is important. It's so funny. You're talking about this. And for obvious reasons, when I tell these stories here, we're going to have to leave out who I'm talking about.
Sure.
I've got a lot of friends that are in the business and NHL goalie coaches, but I got one that two seasons ago literally had a fist fight in the locker room. Literally, oh. Him and the head coach were throwing haymakers at each other in between periods. This is the NHL, okay? And then it made me think of another story. Another NHL coach, you know, it was really interesting the way he put it. He goes, you know, I'm at every practice. I'm in all the meetings. I go out to dinner with the staff, every road trip, we're in the hotels, we're in the buses, but you know what? I'm really not part of the staff. Isn't that interesting? It's a full-time NHL coach who says, I'm with these guys all the time, but at the end of the day, I'm not really part of the inner circle.
I think it's all rooted in the fact that the head coach, maybe the assistants as well, they just don't understand goaltending. They don't have goaltending knowledge, right? So they have a different opinion about that player than they do on any other player on their team. They have different level of expectations. And you've heard that, you know, I don't know, just stop the puck. Well, I mean, that's just a dumb thing to say, but you hear it all the time, you know? And so I think about not being part of the staff, not feeling like you're part of the staff, sometimes is that's the reason. I believe that's the reason, because they think goaltending is just an odd science they don't know anything about. They just want it done well.
But the expectancy part of it, right? You watch every single game.
Yeah.
Bonehead play after bonehead play.
Yeah.
So guys have these brain freezes, make horrendous decisions. If a goaltender makes one, the whole house is going to come down.
Correct.
Why can't a goaltender make a mistake? And I was listening to something the other day, and it kind of struck me, and it was a goal is a goal, regardless of whether it was scored from the other end of the ice or it was scored point blank, open net, back door. It's just, there's the same value in the goal. And it really made me think a lot about, okay, a goal is a goal, and the ability to shake it off after the fact. Now, were you somebody that spoke with the goalies in between periods? Were you someone that spoke with the goalies immediately after the game? Did you wait till the next day? When you were coaching at Providence, when you were coaching at Harvard, were you talking to guys in between periods before? Like, what was kind of your way of doing things?
I can imagine that you would expect me to say this, but it really depended on the personality, right? Depended on who you were dealing with, what kind of goalie you were dealing with. It really depended upon what kind of relationship you forged with that goalie. For me, it was pretty close with everybody, right? So I didn't speak with them very much during a game. After a game, yes, if they wanted to, right? Always the very next day, if it was a Saturday game, it would be Monday, we'd do video together, that kind of thing. We would go over everything. If something unusual was happening in the game that I thought the goalie needed to know, absolutely told him every time. And most of the time, that wasn't about like, hey, your rebound control is this, or I need you to be on your edges, nothing like that. It was more about systems, right? So if I thought that he could help us react to something that the opponent was doing on a regular basis, I would share that with him for sure, right? If I felt like he wasn't communicating well with his D, I would share those kind of things. Wasn't really much about making corrections about the way that goalie was playing, all right? Unless it was something entirely egregious, you know, like a poorly played puck, basically, would be normally a good example that might happen, but almost never. Usually, if I talked to him between periods, it had something to do with something the other team was doing that we could either help out with, take advantage of, or something like that. Or if they particular power play setup, you know, those sort of things.
Marge, I'm going to ask you this because you're a lot younger than Bruce and I. And so you're just coming out of playing.
Yep.
I had a really good discussion. So we have Goalie Headspace on the Stop a Goaltending U app, and we have Brett Dalemore that does that for us, and he's the performance coach at Boston University. And I had a talk with him the other day about speaking to the goalies after the game. So what I do at Boston University is I take the SIG game day and the evaluation that gives the goal expectancy and rebound retention and all that stuff. And about a half hour after the game in the weight room, I make my way down to the weight room and hang out there a little bit. And then goalies will come out after they do their thing. And then we'll go over the report in terms of, hey, what was your, freeze rate? What was your goal expectancy? And just kind of like the main stuff from the game. And I personally can't imagine leaving the game without talking to the goalie.
Oh, yeah.
Because I don't want them spinning at night trying to wonder what I thought about the game and that particular player or that. And it's not an in-depth conversation, but I just feel like I have to touch base. And Brett was like, it's really emotional after games and it takes a while to settle down. And maybe it's not the best time to talk to the goalies after the game. Merce, how do you feel? Do you feel as after you played that you want to hear from the goalie guy, or are you okay waiting till the next day?
For me, I mean, I think it depends on the game. Like, that's kind of a weird answer to give, but it depends on the game. If I'm super confident in my game and I'm playing well every night, like I was happy with it and I just didn't want to talk to anybody, I was like, I'm good. But if like I knew there was things that I needed to work on, like I wanted to talk to somebody. Right. And even like now that I'm on the coaching side of things in the junior game, like for me, I try to stay away from the goalies during the game. You know, just let them do their thing. I don't think they need any more information. But after the game, even if it's just like a, hey, nice job, like you played a heck of a game today, like I think it is important to talk to them after the game, especially like if their confidence is kind of dipped a little bit. if they have kind of a game where they let in a soft goal, or if they play an all around bad game, like, I think it's important that they need that feedback, because the feedback from the head coach is going to be like, hey, we need that one. Right. Yeah. And you need someone who can break it down and like actually tell you what happened there. And I think that's kind of where we step in, right? Like Bruce was saying, advocating for the goalies, right?
Bruce, have you ever had a goalie that you interacted with in between periods?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I've had a few. I've had a few at Harvard, thinking out loud. Yeah. I had one in particular that first game, freshman, Boston College. And as we're returning to the locker room, I'm just with him, beside him, not saying much. And he turns to me and tells me that the shot clock isn't accurate. And I
first game.
It was his very first game, yeah.
Oh, boy.
Tells me the shot clock at Boston College isn't accurate. He had more shots than the clock says. And the only thing I turned to him when I said, I just told him that's of no concern. And I said, don't ever share that with anybody else on this staff. And then the next day I came in and it was, can you believe he, and I got it from the staff.
Yeah. Yeah.
I said, well, that's all I told him was, so it's, you know, let's forget about that. Focus.
So it's funny you bring that up, because when I was in Boston and had Byron Defoe, that play went down to the other end. He looked up.
Oh yeah. See the shot.
He looked up right away and he wanted to know if he got credit. And Byron was a smart guy. He knew that his comps determine his salary and his numbers were going to determine his comps. Right. So like he knew that. So I multiple times had to go have talks with the guy counting the shots at the Garden to make sure that he knew that it was important to our goaltender that he didn't mess up. And, you know, that is, let's go in the goalie dad. Okay. Let's go. I told you this was going to go to the goalie dad. And Jackson Irving is a goaltender, freshman goaltender at UMass, was in the USHL last year for Sioux Falls. So how is a goalie dad? I get this all the time. Do you deal with your kid playing junior hockey, prep school hockey, whatever, and your kid making 37 of 39 and you look on the website the next day and he made 19?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like how did you look at that? Because I tell you, that's probably the most I get from goalie parents.
Sure.
They just can't deal with the shot clock.
Yeah. I mean, we would talk about it, like him and I, but I would never go any further. It's out of our control. And in the USHL, it was always clear, depending on whether you were on the road or at home, right? Sometimes you're on the road, that clock would ring up because they want to make it look like their home team is pounding your net, right? And when you're home, sometimes it isn't the same. And there was really all kinds of incidents last season, just like what you're describing. But I told them, like, that's not in our control. Let's just control your game and, you know, and keep getting better and keep moving forward. And you can't worry about those things, even though, like you were just saying, that, you know, those numbers become important, because when Sunday rolls around and you're reading the box scores, you know, you're like, oh, Colin Wynn had 38. Yeah. You know what I mean? So
without a doubt. Well, yeah. Like if you call Bruce, if you called me today and say, hey, Dak, there's this goalie from the North American League named John Smith. And I think he'd be a great fit for, you know, SIGU advising. And I would go, like, as you're talking, I would be punching his name and elite prospects, and I'd be looking at his stats.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing, and it sounds a little bit goofy here, but I know those stats aren't right. Damn it, I know those stats aren't right,
yeah.
But I'm looking at the stats,
yeah.
And I can't help myself. And one of the things, like I try to explain to coaches, because anytime a goalie questions the stats, the coaches get pissed off at them. Sure. Just that's just the way it is. Well, it should be all about wins, and you shouldn't care about your stats. And then I always go back to the same thing. I say, well, look, coach. You were a left wing. If you went out in a game, had 7 shots on net, mm-hmm. scored a goal and had 2 helpers, mm-hmm. and you look in the box score the next day and you scored a goal, your helpers, your assist didn't show up, and it showed you for three shots, you'd be sour. Mm-hmm. And the fact that we judge goalies on stats, because that's all we have to go by, even though we know that in the North American League, you've got someone sitting in a penalty box mm-hmm. that's trying to look through three players to determine if the rebound was hit the net or not. It's virtually impossible. You go down to youth hockey and it's some 14-year-old eating a hot dog and having a Coke, right, trying to keep shots. And that's just the way it is. So am I right though? Like that's what it is.
100%.
You know, and so, you know, as a goalie, Merce, right? How did you cope? Because you had to deal with, how did you cope with the fact that shots it's a gong show?
For me, I mean, even at the Division III level, it was a gong show. But like realistically, it all evens out in the wash. Like in total, right? So you're going to have your games where they said you had 65 shots and it was some girl on the soccer team taking your stats. And then you got the next game where some away team gives you 18 when you should have had 25. So for me, it just evened out in the wash. And I was just like, you know what? Screw it. I'm just going to play my game and it's going to even out at the end of the day. So I can't focus on the shots.
So I say that all the time, and that's what I say, but I don't really believe it.
Right.
I don't think for all the shots that you don't get, I don't think you're in another rink one day picking up shots. I just don't. I like to say it because it sounds good, but in all practicality, like, what would you tell Jackson last year? He's playing for Sioux Falls. They're playing Omaha. He makes 35 saves. He gets credited for 22. What do you tell Jackson?
I just tell him, I mean, again, I tell him to kind of block it out and keep moving forward, even though we know it's such a huge part of their, of the way they're scored, the way they're, you know, the way they're thought of, you know, on the internet, for instance, or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. But I just think it's too much to worry about, right? So it's been egregious at times, you know, but oftentimes, you know, the number in the USHL, the number ends up being high, really high. Like, I mean, he had over 60 saves one night in mm-hmm. Fargo, and they were legit. I mean, they were legit, and that was a super high number. He was on the road, you know, so you had the benefit of you know, their home team counting shots on, right? It irritates them for sure, right? Because they, you know, for instance, let's say you end up having a good game, but you know the game starts and there's been four or five shots on net. They get a power play, they score. What's your save percentage? It's real bad. And now you're in the net like just praying for more shots, right? And I'm in the stands going, he needs more shots. We got to get it over 90. Needs more shots. Yeah. You know. Yeah. And then on the odd occasion,
just not breakaways and two on ones, but get more shots,
more point shots. Yeah, we get more point shots, right? But yeah, I did it in USHL ranks last year. I sat there and did math in my head constantly. We got to get this to 90. We got to get this to 90, 9, 10, whatever, right? USHL is just run and gun, as you know. So it's a difficult spot for goalies, but you learn a lot.
Without doing it right now.
Yeah,
I can do it in 2 seconds, but without doing it right now, I bet you there aren't five goalies in the USHL with over 900 right now.
I believe that's the right number because I look. When my son's year, it was six total by the end of the season, right?
See, that's incredible.
And I believe I think you're right at five because it's a tough spot. But you do learn a lot. Again, we back to the beginning of this when we talked about resilience and having thick skin and being able to bounce right back and those kind of things. A lot of goalies learn that lesson, you know, at that level, tier one junior.
Well, talking about the lessons being learned. Okay. Sure. So we've got from a podcast standpoint, it's about the goalies, the goalie parents, the goalie coaches. Mm-hmm. Now we're very alike because we both are goalie coaches at a high level that had kids that were goalies. And we look at all these different paths on how to get to the highest level.
Right.
And you decided, okay, my son, I'm going to take the prep school path as opposed to an academy as opposed to a club U16, U18, go out to Little Caesars, or because you could have helped get him anywhere. Sure. From hey, you want to go out and play in Saskatchewan? I'll find you a team in Saskatchewan. So you had a lot of opportunity for Jackson. You decided on the prep school route. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about that. Why prep school? Why not academy? Why not club?
Right.
Why did you pick prep school for Jackson?
Well, I think we're pretty traditional here in New England, right? So prep school is still a traditional route here in New England. The academy thing, when he was at that age, was relatively new, you mm-hmm. know. And as you know, I'm not sure what everybody's opinion is about it. My opinion early on wasn't great. It's changed now, right? A little bit. So, but traditionally, like having him on a prep school campus, you know, living away from home in a dorm, having the need to get along with roommates, teammates, you know, you know, we felt like that was important for him, right? And so far, it's been, you know, it's paid dividends for sure. He almost left his senior year to do, you know, USHL and online and all that. And honestly, I'm glad that he didn't. I'm glad that he had the full like senior year experience. He played another sport, played a lot, had a lot of fun at that, to the extent where he thought about trying the two sport rule, a route at Division III level, you know what I mean? Or something like that. But anyway, he got to play another sport, go to a prom, have a real graduation, you know, all those things. And I feel like when you're in your 30s and 40s and you're telling your story, I think you're lucky to have those memories, right? And prep school did that for him. And of course, like anywhere else, you meet so many great people.
You're speaking nice and calmly about this, yeah. But you got to understand, Merce, there's a lot of pressure at that point, because I live that too. Because my son Joey was going into a senior year, and there was all this pressure to leave and go junior.
Right.
Yep.
And you had all these people saying, oh, he's got to go junior. He can't go back for a senior year. He wasn't drafted. He's not going to get drafted next year if he doesn't leave, you know, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. And it's hard, because as a parent, all we want to do is make the best decisions for our kids and give them the best advice. Ultimately, I mean, you know, they're older at that point. They've got to make decisions for themselves, but they're obviously relying on you to help with that. And I felt a lot of pressure going into senior year, whether to play it out. And I'm just like you, it worked out.
Yeah.
You know, it worked out. Joey was captain of the hockey team, captain of the soccer team, captain of the tennis team. He had a great year, got drafted, got a full scholarship to ASU. But going in, I was nervous. Sure. That I had made a mistake, because he had a North American team that wanted him. And I thought, okay, I know how good that league is for goalies. Mm-hmm. But I didn't do it. So I'm looking at how calm you are now answering that question, but it wasn't easy back then, was it?
No, not easy, because the allure, especially of the USHL, right? That's where all the kids want to go, you know, and the allure was there for sure, right? But now going through it, and you know, he's still played in that league and so forth. It was absolutely the right decision to play high level in New England prep school. And then, you know, because I've been telling people now that ask me the same questions, just mostly other parents, right? And I said, you know, unfortunately, you know, had he not been at Cushing, I don't think he would have been, you know, drafted in the USHL. Like, I don't think he would have gotten to the USHL level. And I don't think he would have gotten to UMass Amherst without, you know, being at that USHL level, right? Or close to it, anywhere in that area. So it's worked out so far, you know. And it's nerve-wracking, you know, when the coach is on the phone with your 17-year-old son and telling them that, you know, we've got a spot for you next year. And now your head's buzzing, like, okay, you know, what do we do about school? It's really.
And he was originally drafted by Cedar Rapids, right?
He was drafted, by Cedar Rapids, yeah. And, you know, he went out there right away, participated with some of the activities with their team. You know, when he was still at Cushing, he went out there during break and that sort of thing. And then their camp that summer. And, But at the end of the day, and then, you know, they offered him a spot on their team for that following season. We batted it back and around, back and forth, and you know, he ended up staying at Cushing, and we're pretty happy with that decision.
I don't think we've talked a lot of goalie, and I don't know if we ever talked about this. The decision to go from prep into the USHL as opposed to prep null USHL.
Right. Right.
Did you think about that that time? Was it a consideration? Should I go in the Sharks? Should I go in the Shark Tank? Or should there be another year? And it's funny, you brought up Colin Wynn, you know, earlier on in one of the goaltenders that trains here at Stop at Goaltending U, and he went straight from, he went NCDC into straight into the USHL. And that was a big discussion right there. Sure. Should the NAHL be, even if you're a very good goaltender, should the NAHL be that next step before, because the USHL is murder on goalies.
It is. Murder. Well, I mean, we all, thinking back, right? Like, people told us that, right? Told me that, right? But you don't necessarily, I don't think you necessarily completely believe it until you're in it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Jackson did NCDC, well, prep, NCDC prep, USHL.
Oh, because of COVID. Yeah.
Yes. And so, you know, but he was, we thought he was going North American League last season. He was tendered. We were there. We were in Janesville, participating in
heck of a program.
Oh yeah, and I also know that Janesville, I mean, through several, I believe, staffs, the same goalie guy was always there.
Oh yeah, Larry, yeah, does a great. He's produced some really good goaltenders.
Exactly. Yep. So we just figured that's where he was. He got tendered there, and that's where he was going to be right after Cushing. And I knew that the goalie development piece was really good there, right? So we were literally in Janesville. They had their open camp, but he was skating with their team at night and participating in the camp during the day. And just as that was winding down, somebody called from Sioux Falls. So 7 hours more, right? And into a kid, right? That's where I am now, where I'm thinking, you know, Janesville, good spot, you know, but if you stood in the Janesville rink, for example, right now, and then
compared to the Palace in Sioux Falls,
and then you go to Sioux Falls. Sioux Falls is an NHL building just scaled down. I mean, it's, you know, it's a major facility, right? So, you know, once the 17 or 18 year old kid gets that phone call, he wants to be there, right?
Yes.
So we literally, you know, changed flights, got in the car, drove 7 more hours west, and as soon as he got there, man, my first question was, these are your goalies. This is who's here. Yep. And it was because of his age and the age of the guys that were there. I'm like, they're going to keep them. And they did, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. And you're right. I mean, I think the ideal development path may be just that, and, you know, NAHL, USHL, if that's where you're at. Right.
But that's hard to do when you've got a USHL team knocking down your door.
Correct.
And because you may not get that opportunity again.
He knows, yeah.
Like, exactly. That's the hard thing, right? You could be like, hey, I want to take the stairs. I don't want to take the elevator. Yeah. I'm going to go to the NAHL. And then you go to the NAHL. If you don't crush in the NAHL, you're not going to the USHL.
That's right. That's exactly, you know? Right. And I believe that's what was going on in his head. That's a little bit about what I was thinking. And he didn't know what Sioux Falls looked like until we got there, right? But when you get there, there's no better building in that league. They have the best attendance in that league. And so for him, you know, once they had a spot for him, that's where he wanted to stay. You know?
Absolutely. Merce, you going back to your junior days right here? Are you thinking about all those decisions that you had to make? And
a little bit, yeah. I decided to stay in the Northeast and play NCDC, or Premier is what it was called for the USPHL at the time. And I mean, I think it was a good path. But I mean, I got bounced around a bunch too. So a lot of different trades, a completely different path to what Jackson had. But there's definitely so many different things that you had to take into consideration and making those decisions as an 18-year-old. And obviously your parents feel that too, right? Just as you guys were talking about. And it's a family decision at the end of the day. And taking all the factors into account and just almost hoping you make the right decision, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
But you just got to dive like head first into it. And just, if you make that decision, like you got to crush it wherever your feet are, right? Just like we always talk about, you got to be where your feet are and crush it wherever you go. So like NCDC, it was just, this is what I got to do. And
yeah,
that's the path that I chose to take.
And that's a really good point though. Like you do have to crush it. Because the supply and demand curve is all out of whack for goalies. There's just so much. So, you know, we're talking about this and, you know, I'm talking about the struggles that I had trying to figure out the best path for Joey. So Joey got traded Joey got drafted by Omaha, traded to Sioux City, traded to Muskegon, hadn't played a game yet, right? He got traded twice and hadn't played. So like for me, I look at how do parents do it?
Yeah.
Bruce is in the business. I'm in the business and trying to understand the landscape. Like you mentioned, Merce, the NCDC premiere. Now you've got that NCDC Central, is it?
Yeah.
That's really picking up. Is it Central now?
It's either Central or Midwest. I'm not 100%.
Something like that. Like they got some pretty good teams now.
I do.
And then there's the EHL around here.
Yep.
And trying to figure out, trying to understand, because you get such a discrepancy in terms of how teams are run. You could go to one junior team and they make the kids get there at 9 o'clock in the morning, do 2 hours of mandatory study hall, make sure that everybody's enrolled in at least two classes, doing community service in the afternoon once a week, and then you have other junior teams where the kids show up, play hockey, go home, play Xbox.
Yeah.
You've got one team that's catering pregame dinner, and you got another team pulling into Wendy's. I don't know how parents do it.
Yes. Yeah, I think it's definitely like we said, like I just said, like it's a family decision. You got to take everything into account. I'm fortunate enough to be in Worcester where they run things very professionally, right? Like they're there in the morning, they got to do their lift, they got their practice, they got video. It's run pretty darn well, but there's other teams in like, even in other leagues that might be a tier two league where it's run like show up to the rink, get on the ice. All right, you can go home. That's it.
Yeah.
So that's a hard thing to realize as a parent. It's like, yeah, this might be a tier two team, but are you really getting the best development for your kid? And I think that's a big part of a parent's decision too. Right. So I think that's a question I have for you, Bruce. It's just like finding the right spot where, you know, your kid's going to flourish and develop as a player and as a person. So like, what was that experience like just trying to like fiddle through that?
Sure. Yeah, it's hard because a lot of it's out of your control, right? I mean, and again, like you said before, just your average, you know, kind, caring parent versus at least someone like that's been in the business a little bit, right? I mean, there's a huge gap right there. You know what I mean? In terms of understanding, but you know, even my son's experience is like, it's not like you can just pick and choose where you want to go, and then. Not only that, but you don't necessarily know what it's like there. I mean, what I find now is when guys are moving around, the first thing they do is they pick up the phone. Because, I mean, I can go down most all rosters and USHL rosters and find somebody that I know. You know, not everyone, obviously, but a lot of them, right? And in some cases, it's even the goalies, right? And different varying degrees of relationships with these people. But, you know, one of Jackson's teammates just went through it playing in the BC. They were going through ownership change. It just turned into a mess, right? And he, you know, had an opportunity to go play on a team in the NHL. But what's it like down there? Is it any better down there, right? But we have the ability to get a hold of somebody that we know that can give us a quick synopsis of what the experience is like, what are the facilities like, you know, what's the staff like, what should I prepare for, right? And that has proved to be valuable. Even for me, like when Jackson went to Sioux Falls, you know, the GM was standing at the door when we walked in because he saw the purple bag, right, from Cushing. and it stands out. So he literally opened the door for us at the rink. I've never met him before, right? So right away, I'm literally watching Trouts with the GM, and he's telling me about his philosophy and who the different kids are on the ice. And there was one or two out there that were friends of his, right? So right away, I felt comfortable, right? And then he met his billet family, and I was there for that too. They made me feel comfortable. So, you know, those are the things that make a difference, right? Like, you know, who's running the organization? What sort of emphasis do they put on the development of the players? It's really hard to tell, but if you can get some insight from anybody that's already played in that organization that you might have known from the past or even current, that's super valuable, you know? Because like, is it Jackson had a friend move from BCHL to Texas, and he was told right away, this is really a well-run organization, but these guys are off the rails. So he was prepared for that. So when the guy got in his grill early the first week, he was ready for it. He knew what that person's intentions were. The guy had a personality that otherwise he might not have been ready for. But he was able to do some research, and therefore he emotionally he was ready for that, you know.
Now, in terms of getting ready, I kind of want to wrap up down this sure. track a little bit with the transition. You as a coach and your son walking into UMass Amherst, Greg Carmel as the head coach, experienced guy, reputation as a hard guy.
Yep.
And what are you telling Jackson as Jackson's walking? You're driving him to school the first day. You're bringing him up to drop off his stuff at the dorm. What are you telling him about the transition now, what he's walking into?
I told him that, you know, athletically, his allegiance, and he gets 100% of his direction from his coaches, right? And so I told him to make sure that you're on the right page with those guys. And then I said, for a goalie, and a particular goalie in his situation, I mean, he's going into a situation where they cleaned house a little bit. They had a number of spots for goalies. I mean, I understood what they had envisioned for a role for him, right? It wasn't like they recruited him for 12 months. You know, they had a need. They knew that he could fill that need and so forth. So, but I told him, you know, your job here, we're not talking academically. That's a whole different conversation. That's extremely important, right? But athletically, I said, you know, you need to right away build allies on your team. You build up allies with all your teammates, and it ends up being very prophetic and very important when you're a new guy on the team, right? You need to create alliances, you know, so that, and particularly for the goalie, right? Because I mean, I know from a culture perspective, you know, teammates want their buddies to be successful. They want their buddies to have a good experience and to contribute and to do all those things. And so he's done everything that I've told him that I thought was important, which is align with the coaches right away. Greg Carville is a very interesting, interesting guy. His approach is I really like it a lot. I mean, he is not just blowing his whistle and giving orders, right? He wants to be in those guys' lives, you know, sort of from a mentor perspective. Right. They do a lot of mentorship. Every single player has an alumni that he's aligned with directly that they communicate with on a regular basis. Right.
That's pretty cool. And I never heard that before. That's cool.
Carve encourages the players, you know, when they have, depending on how their schedule goes and this and that, to stop in. And he more or less tells them to stop in every now and then. Right. So I tell my son, you do that, you know, don't be an annoyance, but you know, he wants to know how you're doing. He wants to know how school's going. He wants whatever. Make sure you get in the office and sit down, and cause he wants to know how you're doing emotionally. Right. How you're doing with it. It's interesting because I haven't seen too much of that. I know there are great guys all across the country, and I certainly don't know them all. But Carve really, it's important that he meets with these kids just informally to see how it's going, just to be more than like coach player. Right. And so I told him to make sure he does that. He does that. I told him to create a lot of alliances on that team from the older guys, captains, all the way down to the new guys. And he's done that as well. Right. And the last thing I told him was on the ice, you're going to surprise him. And he got offended. Right. He He said, what do you mean I'm going to surprise them? And I said, well, Jackson, you know, they know what you can do. I said, but they haven't watched you for 6 or 8 months, right? They needed somebody to do what you're doing, and you're doing it exceptionally well so far, right? So it's quite a battle for him, but he's doing quite well.
I love what the building alliances.
Yeah.
And I always say you got to build a team. You need the bus driver. Yes. You need the communications guy, yes, the PR guy. You need everybody, the assistant. You need everybody pulling the same way. I remember Carter Hutton was one of the kids that would come do some stop at goaltending camps and clinics and stuff. And what a great kid he was. And I remember I said, geez, how did Carter make it? I could list 20 other guys that had the same skill set as Carter Hutton. And I went to a Predators morning skate when he was with the Predators. And I was actually sitting up with Barry Trotz after practice talking to him about it. And he worked everybody on the ice. He was challenging. He wouldn't let the coaches get off the ice until they scored on him. He made them, hey, you're not getting off. You got to score on me before you get off the ice. And they'd shoot and shoot until they scored a breakaway on him. And he was chirping the guys. He had the whole thing. And I'm like, no wonder this guy's doing well and he's established himself in the NHL, because when it's his turn to play, the guys are going to play for him. The coaches want him to do well. So when he goofs up, they're going to cut him some slack.
That's right.
Because he works his butt off and he just has a way about pulling people in. And I'm sure that everybody that worked in that organization was on his team. And so that building alliances, that really struck a chord with me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's critical. It's critical. I mean, the last time he got into a game this year, a senior D-man skated right up to him, first stop, just goes, we're going to play for you.
Nice.
Love that.
It was good. He told me that like after the game. You
know? Wow. That's heavy right there.
Powerful stuff.
Yeah. It was good. It was good. They're good guys. And like I said, the billing alliance is part, because these people go to bat for you. Right. I mean, and like what you just said, where Carter Hutton was challenging his coaches, all he's doing is building a relationship with his coaches. It doesn't really matter whether they score or not in that situation. Right. He's just building a relationship with his coaches. When I go to games, these assistants line up and shake my hand like I'm at a funeral or a wedding or something, I swear. And it's only because he's made an impact on them as a person, you know, and in terms of working hard and everything else. Right. So I know that he's built strong relationships with these guys, cause they tell me that pregame, if I happen to see them watching warmups or something, you know, so it ends up being a pretty crucial part of the process, especially when you're not a second round pick and you're just an automatic to be tossed in the net. Right.
Yeah.
Which is most people's experiences, right? Right. So, that alliance building and earning respect, you know, from your teammates and your coaches, it just ends up being crucial, because whoever's going to pull the strings at some point, you know, you're going to rate with them. You're going to rate high with them because of your character, you know, as long as you've got the skill set. And from a goalie's perspective, if they can win a hockey game with you in the net, I'd like to think they're going to give you an opportunity.
Well, Merz can't relate, because he was a second round pick in the Monday Night Beer League, you know, the 9 p.m. game. Yeah, he was a second round pick.
You know, it's not as easy. It's just not.
Challenge is still the same, though.
Okay, Bruce, I got one more thing for you. I've been eyeing this mask behind you.
I was thinking the same thing.
Oh, yeah.
For like 40 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
Where's that from?
Tell us the story behind that. That's a Higgins mask. That's Ernie Higgins.
No Higgins.
Right? I mean, look at the NHL in the 70s. You'll see them on half the guys. I mean, I had played with two of them. So I'm dating myself, obviously, right? It's a collectible.
No kidding.
The other one I have is painted, so apparently not quite as valuable. That one's just white. That one has a sticker on the inside still. I actually wore it freshman year in college, and then the rule changed. I literally went to a CC, like one of those CCM, you know, like Mike Cronin style.
1200.
Yeah, Mike Vernon style. And then I properly split my head open right here with a shot up because they didn't handle the impact as well as those did. Those stung a little bit, but never really got cut wearing that thing.
The amazing thing is nothing protecting the eyes.
Yeah.
True. And I show the bridge kids at the academy here. I show them a picture of myself and Pee Wee. And I've got a Jacques Plante mask with nothing protecting. So I played as a kid, as a goalie, with nothing protecting my eyes.
Yeah.
It's amazing. But Bruce, I can't thank you enough for this.
This was good.
I have a feeling that we could go 10 hours straight.
You guys have been rolling this whole time.
If we wanted to, wealth of knowledge, what you've done for goaltending in New England and the area and how many kids that you've helped out. That's really what it's all about, right? You know, you've helped out so many kids in the area and you're such a legend in this, in New England here, as the goalie coaching field and your experience as a player. And now you get to see your son follow. I think that's pretty cool. I just want to thank you very much for being on today's podcast and I appreciate you taking the time with us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Bruce, thank you so much.
Thanks.
Okay, Merce, my head's spinning right now. I've got that. I got that mentorship idea, how Greg Carville has all the players with a mentor and an alum that played at UMass as their mentor and having contact with them. I'm thinking whether it's a high school program, whether it's a junior program, I'm thinking here at the Bridge, what a great idea to put one of the current Bridge goalies and connect them with an alum.
100%. I thought that was an unbelievable idea, right? So
yeah,
these people who've had your experiences and they know what you're going through and you can bounce those ideas off of them. And if you're going through a rough time, they've probably gone through that rough time. So just having that resource is an invaluable piece.
It's so funny. You're eyeballing that mask.
I know.
So if you're listening to the podcast, you may not have caught it, but Bruce was doing the podcast and he had this vintage mask in the background. It looks sick.
It was unbelievable. I couldn't take my eyes off it. Bruce was talking. I'm still listening, but I'm like, I got to ask him about that come the end of this interview because that's a piece, right? Like you said, he wore it his freshman year of college. I don't want to make Bruce feel old, but that thing, that's an awesome mask.
It's too funny. And I never saw Bruce play, but people tell me he was a heck of a goalie and it doesn't surprise me that he was very good because he's very good at what he does.
100%. He's a guy who, whatever he does, he's going to do it to the fullest extent. And I think that's something that even he didn't say it, but we can take that away. And everybody who's been watching or listening to the podcast can take away too. It's just whatever you're doing in life, do it, you know?
Didn't you love the fact that he talked about being an advocate for the goalies, like being a man, like, did we talk any X and O's at all in this podcast?
Zero.
No X's and O's.
Yeah. As a young goalie coach, just coming into the coaching game, I it was nice to hear it from, you know, another goalie coach who's done it for years and years and advocating for the goalies and towing that line with the staff. I just think that that's something that sometimes I struggle with. And being able to bounce those ideas off of Bruce and off of you, I think that helps me kind of figure out how I'm going to interact with my goalies, with my other staff members.
Yeah. And it's not easy. And if you've been around as long as I have, and if you've worked for Mike Keenan, like I have, there are going to be some battles. There are going to be some tough days where you've got to go toe to toe with coaches and defend the guys. And there's other times where you know that it wasn't a bad goal. But you also know it's not the right time and place to die in the sword on it.
100%.
It takes a little bit of experience to understand when's the right time to stand up for your guy or girl, and when the right time is to just say, yeah, you're right. Even though you're wrong, you're right, coach. You're right.
It seems like you had some trial and error with that.
Oh my, I've had a career of trial and error with that. It is the most unrealistic expectations that coaches have of their goalies that it's just it's actually overwhelming sometimes to see the amount of mistakes that go on in a hockey game and the lack of wiggle room for a goaltender to do anything, make any mistakes. It's tough to handle sometimes, quite honestly.
So I think that we should have the same relationship with the coaches. We should be able to give it to them when the forwards make a mistake.
Well, if you talk to a few goalie coaches, they do. They'll be right on the bench chirping the other coaches. So, because they get chirped every time there's a goal. So they'll chirp back if someone makes a mistake. So that I stay away from. I got no interest in that personally because I don't go behind the bench. I sit up in my coach's booth and do my thing.
Yeah, I'm more of a bird's eye view guy myself.
Yeah. So what's going on in the app? Anything new going on in the app this week?
So this week we had a goalie extra. It was five things that goalie parents need to know. You did that piece. You know all about it. I haven't had a chance to watch it yet fully.
But it's goalies and goalie parents.
Okay.
Yeah.
You want to give us a little sneak peek?
Well, if you've read my books, it's going to reinforce a lot that's in the books. But I basically took a look at the five key components. And once again, it really had nothing to do with technique and strategy. It's more the mental part of the game. And like you mentioned, the resiliency. It's about the resiliency. It's about, you know, not rushing and taking your time. And it's funny, a lot of the stuff that we talked about in this podcast is in those five things every goalie and goalie parent needs to know. So I hope people enjoy it. And you know, how about that Razor piece, that making goalies?
Unreal. Yeah. And like the thing about Razor is, yeah, he's done all this stuff in the NHL, but the fact of the matter is he's brought everything to coaching too and to broadcasting through Nesson. It's a great piece, and Razor's a great personality to bounce things off of too. The interview, he did a great job with that as well.
Hey, I love the best part of the interview for me was when Razor was like, when I started at Nesson, when I started doing TV, I wasn't very good. But he liked it.
Yeah.
So he liked it. And then he did what he had to do to get better at it.
I'm thinking that's
goalie role, right? Like that is goalie role. It's like, you don't have to be the best goalie starting out, but if you love it and you have passion, then you start figuring out what do I need to do now to get better.
Definitely. If that's anything in life too, right? Not just goaltending, not just broadcasting, not just coaching, anything that you want to do in life, you got to put the work in and you got to be passionate about it. If you're not passionate, if you're not passionate about something, you're not all in. You're not going to reach that level that you aspire to get to.
Yeah. Oh, it was good stuff. I love it. And that 30 minutes a week, like you talk about that commitment to get better, 30 minutes a week to work on your mental game, to work on your goalie IQ, to listen to the primers. It's not that much time.
You have all this time during the week. Instead of, you know, playing Xbox for a half hour, log on to the app, get better.
1 minute primers once a day, just get your primers in. That'll set you up for the day. And it's the fact there's small little nuggets and just the compounding primers every day during the week. And then the 5 minute quick video on Saturday and the take 20 minutes on a Sunday to watch a goalie playbook or Razor's Making Goalies or Goalie Extra with Brian DeCourty is truly just learning and growing. And it's the compounding impact, compounding effects from doing it on a consistent basis, which is really going to make big strides in your game.
100%. And you're immersing yourself into goaltending at that point. It's not just at the rink, you take it away from the rink. Yeah. And I think that's invaluable for every goalie to have, and even goalie parents and goalie coaches can get something out of the app in just those 30 minutes a week.
Awesome. Well, I hope everybody out there, goalies, goalie parents, goalie coaches, goalie fans, enjoy today's podcast. We love doing it. It's an honor. We're very grateful that you're listening to us and listening to us talk about the position that we love. Hopefully you'll join us for our next one. And remember, you got this.
I hope you enjoyed the Goalie Podcast by Stop It Goaltending U. If you haven't already downloaded the Stop It Goaltending U app, you can get your free 7-day trial at either the App Store or Google Play.